Session number 24610, wheel 8.
Mr. Guest, reel 8. You were talking about the initial, the state of your leg and everything after you just regained consciousness.
But I'd regained consciousness in the crawl trench, yes. As I said, I looked down at my leg and it wasn't in a straight line. The knee was out of line ability with the thigh. There was a big hole in my trousers and my trousers were soaking wet with blood. And I noticed this piece of bone just inside my trouser leg, and it's about the size of an old halfpenny. And I picked it up and looked at it and just threw it away because, that was the condition I was in. I was obviously in shock, weak from loss of blood, and I just sort of laid there and I thought, oh, what a mess I'm in, Anyway, this Chinese soldier appeared in front of me with a burp gun in his hand, and he looked at me and he got a real snarl on his face and he levelled his burp gun at my chest. And I thought, oh shit. And I closed my eyes and I waited and waited and waited, and then I opened my eyes and he'd gone. And I felt somewhat relieved at that. I thought, well, at least they're not going to kill me yet a while, probably wait for me to die, And I don't know how long passed by because I was lapsing in and out of consciousness, and in no way could I recognise or think about time or lapse of time or whatever. And there was about 4 men lugging this body along the crawl trench past me, and it was Lieutenant Wormhold, and they'd stripped him of his equipment, as they had me, because my pouches and everything, my belt had gone, my trousers were loose around my waist. Oh no, I pulled my belt off anyway, so that had gone, and and my equipment had gone, my Sten gun had gone, and they would pull in Wormhold along this trench, and they lifted him up to sort of get him over my legs, and his trousers were too big for him round the waist, and the waist was hanging down, and it caught in my right foot, and it dragged my leg along the crawl trench, so that the knee was facing, if you think north, south, east, and west, my knee was facing east from my leg. And of course, I shouted out in pain, and this Chinese realised what was happening, and he sort of grabbed hold of my foot and threw it back somewhere near where it ought to be, in line. Anyway, Wormhold's trousers had gone up his leg, and there was a slice out the back of his leg, I would think. The whole of his calf muscle had gone. It had either been exploded away by a grenade or something similar, or it had been shot away, but it was, and his head was hanging back, and he was deathly white, and as I say, in retrospect, I'm sure he was dead, and I'd never heard of him since, so obviously he was dead at the time. Eventually they picked me up, and I was bundled into a hole, which is typical of the Chinese. When they dig their communications trench, they dig little basins out the side of the trench, and they put blankets and bedding of some sort in there, and they sat me up in this igloo type thing, I suppose. I don't know what you would call it, but anyway, a semicircular or semi-globular hole in the side of this trench, and my back was more or less against the wall, and I had an overwhelming desire to lay down, but I hadn't got enough strength in my arms to lower myself down, and I called out to some Chinese and never got any response, and eventually I must have fallen down and went to sleep. I don't know what period of time passed then, but eventually I recall waking up in a what I would think was something like a long basket, a coffin shaped basket with a quilt of some sort underneath me. There was like a bicycle wheel either side of this contraption, and handles at the side, which I suppose really would be like a large two-wheel pram, and a quilt over the top of me, and I was completely naked. I'd stripped all my clothes off. I don't know whether my legs were wrapped up or whether they'd tended to my wounds or not. I don't know what the situation was at that time. And I recall waking up a few times. I wanted to go to the... I wanted to have a pee. And I said, I want to go to the toilet. And this voice said, do you want to piss? And I said, yes. And he said, well, you'll have to piss your bed, like, you know. And I thought, well, this is not any good. And I managed to get them to tip this contraption slightly on its side, and I was able to guide myself mostly over the side of this basket type coffin or whatever it was. And this English, disembodied English speaking Chinese spoke to me, and I said, is this a hospital? He said, no, you will go to hospital. And then I lapsed into unconsciousness again, and eventually got to this, what I would think was an aid station. Would be obviously somewhere a little way behind the lines. I don't know how far, because as I say, I was lapsing in and out of consciousness. And it was in a defile, or a re-entry, as we call it in the army, into this hillside. And a pathway went up the hill in this sort of defile valley, which wasn't very wide, and there were bunkers facing each other. And I was taken into this bunker and placed on a bed, and it was like it wasn't closed in at the front. It stood on two poles, and it had got some sort of roof above it and a wall about 3 foot high, but you were like looking out of a loosely a picture window. And I was laid on this bed, which was constructed, I think, with straw of some sort on the top and just branches from trees. And this Chinese spoke to me and said, we'll be looking after your wounds. And I said, thank you very much. And they strapped me up a bit. And then I was carried over to another bunker, opposite side of the defile. And this boasted a door. And when you got inside it, there was like the old-fashioned type doctor's examination couch with the four legs and a bed with a lift up end, for sitting up patients. And they laid me on this, and it was either Rexine or there was a ground sheet on top, I'm not quite sure. There were sheets hung around the walls, and there was a tilly lamp hanging from the ceiling with a large enamel plate as a shade to direct the light downwards, but in no way was it an operating lamp, just purely and simply a tilly lamp, pressure lamp. And they got some Vaseline or some grease of some sort and rubbed it in my face, around my eyes, around my cheeks, and then they got some gauze or cloth of some sort and placed this over my face, so everything was covered but except my nose, nostrils, my mouth and my eyes. And they produced a tea strainer with some gauze and cotton wool on it, held it over my face, and they dripped ether into it out of a bottle, and anaesthetised me. Anyway, when I came to, I was back in this first bunker with the open side, and I'd got a candle burning on the wall, so it was very slightly light. And that was the first time that I'd really experienced. I mean, there was pain before, but I was in such a intoxicated state, shall I say, by the loss of blood and the shock and one thing and another, I didn't really notice the pain. But after coming out from this operation, I'd got two boards, splints, one up each side of my leg. It was bound very tightly, and the pain was excruciating. It really was bad, and I'd got sticking plaster all up my arm and some on my chest. I couldn't move my nose, and I lifted my good arm up, right arm, and tried to touch my nose, and one of the Chinese got a pocket mirror out and showed me, and I got a strip of sticking plaster down my nose and on my top lip, because my nose had been sliced through and I was holding the bottom bit to the top. I'd got a big lump of sticking plaster and cotton wool on the side of my face. I got another bit on my ear. I got sticking plaster in various places on my wrist, up my arm, a couple of bits on my stomach. I was completely naked. And I was asking there were some Chinese in attendance, presumably first aiders or nurses or whatever. And I tried them to, and I was telling them that I was in pain. And they didn't seem to take a lot of notice. And they gave me a piece of paper. And so I drew the face of a doctor, I thought, with a stethoscope in his ears, and asked him to send him to me. And they nodded as if they were going to send him. And I spent all that night on this bed in extreme pain waiting for the doctor to come. And he came eventually in the morning, and he did speak some English, and he said, "How are you today?" And I said, "Very painful." He said, "I will loosen your bandages, they're a bit too tight." And they did loosen the bandages a bit and repack the leg, and so there wasn't so much pressure on the actual wound area. And it did ease off a bit, but I was pretty well in pain. And during that time, they did actually have put a drip onto me, onto my arm, and I think it was saline solution, saline and glucose or something similar. That the Americans used to use in the field, and I think these were actually American. They showed me the writing on the bottles, and it was actually stuff that had been captured from the Yanks and used by the Chinese for their own purposes. And I'd got a drip running anyway when I came to from this op, and I was told they took some pieces of bone out of my leg and made me more comfortable. And I did eventually go off to sleep, and then I'd got a bottle of a drip bottle on the other side of me, so obviously this was the second one. I'm not sure whether they gave me any tranquilizer or pain relieving drugs at all. I know I was injected a couple of times, and my memory is pretty hazy at that time. I drifted in and out of consciousness. And eventually they deemed that I was well enough to be transported further back to a better aid station. I was loaded onto a stretcher with bicycle wheels either side, and two Chinese soldiers proceeded to pull and push me along these rutted paths over the Korean hillsides. I don't know how long I was on that. I don't suppose I was on there too long. But I know they wheeled me to this village. And as we were nearing the village, they were calling out, "Ingwa Salami, Ingwa Salami," which, as I understand it, is English soldier, but I don't know whether it's in Chinese or Korean. Anyway, the whole of this village turned out, and I know this woman looked over the side of my cot, as it were, and the Chinese, she looked at me, and I thought she was ready to spit in my face. And this Chinese soldier indicated that my leg was broken by the snapping of his fingers, and she put a thumbs up if to say, "That's good, I'm glad he's, you know, I'm glad his leg mashed up," sort of thing. And I don't quite know how or where, but there seemed to be some soldiers appeared from somewhere, and they actually kept a bit of a ring round me to keep the villagers away, because they were obviously intent on doing some damage. And in fact, I know there was another young woman that came towards this stretcher that I was on with a little reaping hook in her hand, and her intentions were pretty evident. And also an old papasan with a stick in his hand, and the soldiers formed a ring around me and kept them away. And eventually I was loaded onto, we were down in by the side of a riverbed. They seem to have built their roads alongside their rivers, and we were alongside this riverbed, and a truck moved up, pulled up, and they'd let the side down or lifted me over the top and laid me on the bottom of this wagon. And there was a few Chinese soldiers on the back. I don't know whether they were going back out the line or what the situation was, but they'd got their packs and their kit on, one thing or another. And we started off along this road, and In the meantime, slightly before this happened, we did pull up at another aid station, I recall that. And my wounds were treated, and it was very, very painful. And then eventually, a hip spiker was administered. I can't remember whether it was before I got on this truck, but anyway, they moved me off on this truck, but I didn't go very far. And I think this was where they moved me to this second aid station. And I was put into a bunker, and there was another English guy in there by the name of George Empson. He was in the Leicestershire Regiment, and he'd been caught whilst out on patrol. He hadn't been wounded, but he'd been surrounded, and obviously the situation was hopeless, and he gave himself up. And he looked after me for a couple of 3 days. I was placed on this not a bed, but a cut into the side of the hill, which was like a flat shelf, and I was laid on there. And George helped me with my bodily functions and one thing or another, because I was actually still in a with splints up the side of my leg. And then he said, "They'll look after you." He said, "They're not too bad here." And they gave me some food, which I found difficult to keep down, probably due to shock and one thing and another. And I remember being taken out and into the daylight, and my leg being unbandaged, and they cleaned the wound up under the trees, under the shade of the tree, and then packed the wound with Vaseline gauze. The Vaseline gauze was taken out of a typical Chinese rice bowl, about 4 inches in diameter and about 2 inches or so deep. And this Vaseline gauze completely filled this bowl up. And they wiped the inside of my quite a large wound in the side of my on the inside of my leg, the exit wound from where the bullet went in. And they wiped this with seemingly sandpaper. I suppose it was cotton wool. But it was very, very, very painful. And then after they'd cleaned the detritus, I suppose, from the wound, then it was packed with a Vaseline gauze. And by the time they'd finished packing the wound up, this small rice bowl was empty. Then I was bandaged up and the splints put back on and one thing and another. And this went on for two or three days, and then I was. This went on for two or three days, and then I was moved. I was moved on, not very far, to where the medical treatment would seem to be a bit better. And I was laid under this tree, and attended by two or three Chinese guys, and one of them grabbed hold of my ankle and he pulled my leg to stretch it out and to get it in a fairly straight position, and then laid it onto a plaster of Paris bandage to the underside of my leg and proceeded to wrap me up into a plaster cast. This was a hip spiker, and it went from the toe of my right leg right up to the leg, right up to the crutch, and then the bandage, and then continued up my torso to the underside of my chest, so the leg was completely immobilised, and I was pretty well too, because obviously I couldn't sit up. So from then on, for some months, I did all my bodily functions lying down. I ate lying down, and I was just able to raise my chin up to eat my food or drink my water or whatever. This was on for about, after I had the hip spiker put on, I was there for a couple of days, and then I was moved on to another truck. And this time, things seemed to be a bit more settled, and there wasn't any Koreans about. And we started off up this road, and as the truck was banging and bumping up and down the road, the shock from the bouncing about was transferred from the bed of this lorry up through my stretcher and right through my body, and I was obviously in some discomfort. And this Chinese guy realised what the problem was, and he raised me up slightly and put his pack under my shoulders, which was like a ground sheet and a blanket, and he put it under my shoulders. And then he sat there cross-legged, and he held the handles nearest my feet up off the truck floor, so that I was taking most of the shock with my shoulders on the from the top of the stretcher. Now, I don't know who that man was. I've got no idea, but I'm eternally grateful to him. I've got no deep hatred for the Chinese. I don't like them, but I've got no deep hatred for them. Anyway, eventually we finished up at, shall I say, in inverted commas, a hospital. This was a farm, a working farm. I suppose roughly in the shape of a rectangle. It was buildings round a rectangular lower yard. There was a gateway through into this open area where they sometimes put their livestock. Also, they did thrashing of rice in there. As I say, it was a working farm, and if one can imagine from looking down on it in plan, it was like a square cornered O, and in the bottom left hand corner, there was this gateway that led into the courtyard. The build, I suppose there would be four rooms up one side, two rooms across the top of the O, four or five rooms down the other side, and then a couple of rooms across the bottom. couple of these rooms consisted of stables, and there were a few Chinese in there that were receiving medical treatment. There were also some prisoners of war who I knew very little about because we were segregated. We weren't allowed to talk with each other. And I was put in a room on the floor on some straw palliasses with an old Chinese coat that had been given to me by some Chinese soldier to put under me. But it might have been the thing that was put under my head on the stretcher, I don't know, but I'd seemed to hang on to it. This was a pillow, and then I was given a thin quilt to cover me up. And I was administered drugs. I had shots of penicillin, which I think were captured from the Americans. I had about 140 shots of penicillin in about 4-hour intervals, and my arms were like pincushions by the time I'd finished. I had about 80 M&B tablets, which I suppose did me a lot of good in one way, but with the fact that I wasn't taken with quite enough water, the M&B tablets attacked my kidneys and I started to urinate blood. There was a Chinese interrogator interpreter came to this hospital, mainly for the cause of interrogation, and he interrogated me every day for weeks on end, and it started. It was always the same format. Anyway, he told me that the reason why I was urinating blood was because my kidneys were being attacked, and I must drink more water. And I did this, and the problem eased up.
So, what do you remember of the interrogation?
The interrogation consisted of it was twofold. One thing was to tell me how good communism was, and then it wanted to know my political background, my father's political background, what he did for a living, my mother's political beliefs and background, and anybody else that he could think of. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, what do I know about politics? I said, I'm only just old enough to vote. And this didn't seem to satisfy me.
It didn't satisfy him.
And the interrogation took the same format day after day. And then it was interspersed with how many tanks round your position, how many guns, how many this, how many that. And I told him, I said, look, I'm only a Lance Corporal, I don't know anything. This didn't satisfy him at all. And he said, you are not try your best, I think. And I said, well, I'm telling you all I know, and that was it.
Was there any violence?
No, there was no physical violence, but there was a lot of mental anguish.
Was this a chap you call Fingers?
Fingers, yeah. I found out that when I went to move to a POW camp, they called him Fingers, because he'd got the art of making his fingers disappear up the leg of his shorts whilst he was interrogating you. I don't know whether it was a nervous trait or what, but he used to put his hand up and down the leg of his shorts while he was interrogating you. As I say, this interrogation used to take on the same format. Your mother's political beliefs, your father's political beliefs, what political party you supported, and Uncle Tom Cobley and all. And then the interrogation about the positions, the tanks, the guns, etc., etc.
Did you have any political beliefs?
Not really. No. I've never voted, and I wasn't a political animal at all. And obviously I knew nothing of any tanks or guns or armoured fortifications of any sort, and the knack of answering an interrogator is to remember to tell the lies that you told yesterday, In other words, keep your story on, you know, as you told it before, and don't add anything or take anything away. Just keep telling the lies you kept telling. And this went on for weeks.